The title of this little talk is Make Your Marriage a Partnership. Marriage in the United States is generally supposed to be a democratic co-partnership. That is a 50-50 relationship in which each spouse has equal rights, privileges, duties, responsibilities, obligations. Actually, not more than one-third of the marriages, even in an educated group, and after 5 years of experience, attain this 50-50 status. Now, I've studied some thousands of marriages from this point of view, having the people rated by close friends and relatives, and I don't believe they are often fooled. They decided that 28% of the marriages were dominated by the wife, 35% by the husband, while 37% were genuine partnerships on a 50-50 basis. Now, when they also rated the happiness of these marriages, they brought to light a marked difference. Of marriages in which the wife was boss, 47% were happy. Of marriages dominated by the husband, 61% were happy. When there was a real partnership, a marriage with two heads, 87% were happy. Now, since every marriage is supposed to be a partnership, and since a partnership has such great advantages, why is it that not much more than one-third of American marriages become partnerships, even among educated people after 5 years of marital adjustment? If one recalls how many obstacles there are in the way, perhaps it's surprising that even one marriage in every three attains something like a 50-50 proportion. Think over some of the married persons you know. From this point of view, there is Burton, who was brought up in a competitive world. There was never any cooperation in his life. His father was a hard, ruthless businessman who trained his only son to follow in his footsteps. At the age of 18, Burton was already out as a salesman, trying to crush his rivals. When he married some years later, he knew nothing in the world except competition. People he met would get the best of him if they could. It was up to him to get ahead of them. Now, his courtship was on a highly competitive basis. It is surprising that his marriage is on a highly competitive basis, too. Is it not merely a question of keeping up with the Joneses? Competition is so much a part of him that his wife, his mother-in-law, his own children appear to him to be competitors. Never mind, he knows how to look out for number one, and yet he's only an extreme illustration of a difficulty which confronts the whole population. For every one of us grows up in a world whose patterns are patterned after competition and conflict more than they are of cooperation. Naturally, we find it hard to transform our attitudes when we wed. A second area. We would call this person Brenda. Brenda, who grew up not merely in a world of general competition, but of special competition and conflict between the sexes. In elementary school, she was always competing with boys for marks, for teachers' favor, for election to class offices. In high school, she was told that she was preparing to go out and make a living, but she was continually warned that she would have to fight men for the right to do so, and that they would block her in every way possible. It's a man's world, her teachers assured her, and several of them were women who viewed it with they were very bitter for that reason. Well, finally she graduated and took a job in which she was continually in competition with men. Now, all her life she had looked on the male sex as a rival, a competitor of the female sex. Is it surprising that she found it hard to cooperate wholeheartedly with her own husband, who belongs to a sex that she conscientiously thinks of as a natural enemy? In everything that Joe suggests, Brenda is inclined to look for a joker, to feel that he is probably putting something over. Men are like that. A third situation. Here's Hugh, who grew up with the opposite idea, that it's a woman's world in which the male never has a show. His father was a busy man who had little time for family responsibilities on weekdays and none at all on Sundays when golf claimed him. He was brought up under the domination of a long series of women, first his mother, then his Sunday school teacher, his kindergarten teacher, his music teacher, his dancing teacher, his first grade teacher, and so on up the line. No men around. Just one woman after another telling him what to do and when he was to do it. Even the girls in his class bossed him because they were more mature than he biologically, emotionally, and socially. Like many other city boys, he grew up with an unconscious resentment against the whole female sex, a poor start for cooperation with any woman later in life. He married a woman who was perfectly willing to let him be the boss, but that is not enough for him. He is continually punishing her for the sins of his mother, his Sunday school teacher, and all the others who bossed him in the days when he couldn't fight back. There's another paragraph regarding insight on this. There's Rosalind, who was bossy from the cradle, as far as I can judge. She would never play unless she could be it. And whether this tendency is partly inborn or merely the result of training, there's no question that some people are by nature highly dominant, others submissive. Rosalind was 100% dominant. A person of that sort, whether man or woman, can't do much real teamwork unless under most favorable circumstances and with proper education for the purpose. Rosalind had neither. She divorced her first husband because each was determined to be the boss. She then married a man who was willing to be a good follower with no disturbing ideas about leadership. He had always been dominated by his own mother, and when the object of worship died, he transferred his worship to Rosalind. Both of them are satisfied, but no one could pretend that the marriage is a democratic co-partnership. With such handicaps, and no one can avoid them all, it is admittedly a hard job for any couple to attain a 50-50 marriage. Yet some do so, and a high degree of happiness goes with it. How then can more people make genuine partnerships out of their marriages? Well, Ralph and Beulah are one couple who found a way. They were in trouble when I first met them. However, and as usual, it was the woman who came for help. "My husband won't cooperate with me," she complained. Well, there were two main points of the difficulty. Number one, he did a lot of things without taking the trouble to consult her in advance. And two, when she wanted to consult him about things that she proposed to do, he would merely reply, "Oh, use your own judgment. Whatever you decide will be perfectly satisfactory to me." Well, neither of these attitudes on his part corresponded to the idea of cooperation. "What's your idea of cooperation?" I asked her. Well, she thought for a moment. "Well, I think it means that we ought to talk things over together," she replied. Well, many women like that or think that. Many men are inclined to be non-cooperative from that point of view. They don't particularly want to talk over their own affairs, because they're afraid of their wives might try to interfere. They are a bit sensitive about having any woman tell them how to run their own business. On the other hand, they don't particularly want to talk over their wives' affairs because they're not interested, or else feel that through ignorance they would not show up to advantage in the discussion. Well, I suggested this to Ralph, who replied, somewhat favorably. They were intelligent young people with high ideas. There was nothing seriously wrong with them, but they were just blundering along in the sort of situation that is likely to become worse unless definite steps are taken to make it better. Well, Ralph added one more point. "I come home at night tired. If I had any energy left, I ought to use it to study for advancement in my own work. But she always tackles me with a lot of trivial problems that I don't know anything about. And every time I find she knows the answer in advance. She doesn't really want me to tell her whether she ought to lengthen the hem of her evening gown or put a nail over the stove to hold up the dishpan. She's already made up her mind. She just likes to think out loud and at great length. Besides this," I contributed, "she's desperately anxious to please you. She wants to see whether you would oppose even the most trivial thing she intends to do. Well, yes, he admitted, a bit grudgingly, she's anxious to please. Well, I continued this way, she's alone all day. The big event in her life is your homecoming. She wants to talk to you, and if you don't want to talk about how high the heels of her shoes should be or whether pink towels will look better in the bathroom than the present green one, why not start a conversation on some other subject? He agreed, and that helped. But there was a deeper difficulty. Ralph was naturally of an aggressive, dominating disposition. As a life insurance salesman, he had to be able to impose his will on others. It was easy for him to make plans and carry them out. Beulah, on the other hand, was somewhat overprotective daughter of a strong-minded mother. She had never been allowed to dominate the home and was therefore all the more anxious in her own marriage that her rights should not be disregarded. If you and Ralph were paddling a canoe together, I remarked to her, would you expect to put as much weight into it as he? Well, naturally not. He weighs 190 pounds, and she said she was trying to keep down to 140 pounds. Well, he'd make it go twice as fast as I could. But if you paddled as hard as you could, you'd figure that you were doing your share. You wouldn't consider yourself a slacker. Of course not. Then if you regard canoeing as a cooperative partnership, which it is, the important thing is certainly not that each paddle with the same strength. That's impossible. But it would be highly important that the two of you paddle in the same direction, wouldn't it? There'd be plenty of trouble if you paddled east and he paddled west. Well, similarly in marriage, if each has a different goal, they will always be in trouble. The best goal is the success of the marriage itself. And if each refers everything to the test of whether it will promote success of their marriage, there will be little occasion for squabbling. Well, Ralph and Beulah each saw that it would be necessary to make a few adjustments toward the common goal of successful marriage. Ralph gave more time to companionship with his wife. Beulah, recognizing that his business success was necessary to their marriage, ceased to pout and sulk if he had to take an evening for a conference of agents. But the important thing is that they agree on their objectives, that they share responsibilities through division of labor, and that each of them do his best for the success of the partnership. Make your marriage a partnership. End tape.